Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
It's Friday, a perfect day for a walk in the park. So we're going to do that a bit later in the show. Even Wall Street went for a walk in the park today, with the Dow closing over 13,000. And of course, athletes in London walked the Oval in the opening ceremonies of the Olympic Games. Get out your comfortable shoe, folks. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdahl, and this is your Marketplace podcast for Friday, the 27th day of July. Happy Olympics, everybody. Go team! And while we're on the subject of teams, we'll bring in our own world-class record-setting team of financial knowledge to review the week that was, including the Dow vaulting back over 13,000 while GDP just treads water in the shallow end of the pool. Our New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore is here, and Sudeep Reddy of The Wall Street Journal. Welcome to the medal stand, both of you.
Hi, Tess.
Hi, Tess.
All right, so two contrary economic indicators today. GDP down to 1.5%. The Dow, though, above 13,000. Heidi, thoughts about what's going on here?
Yeah, it's not synchronized swimming. Use the Olympics.
Nicely done.
Yeah, it's it's actually really interesting. I mean, it's great that the Dow's at 13,000, but as we know, the market is into the economy, and I don't really see what the market has to be so smug about anyway, because things are not good. Corporate earnings are not good, and the fact that we have such a slow rate of growth is concerning because it looks like it's going to continue. This is already the slowest recovery since in the post-war era, and companies are holding on to their inventory, which means that they probably expect more of a slowdown as the year goes on.
Well, Sudeep, you're in Washington. Who is this good news for, if anyone? Can President, can Congress, anyone in Washington really do anything?
It's good news for anyone who's looking for things to stay exactly the way they are, which nobody should want that. But there are people who do, of course. And what's really terrifying about this divergence that we're seeing between the stock market and the underlying economy is that it sets us up for bigger problems down the road, big disappointments. Because what we saw in the economic data today was a weakening in the areas that really matter the most. Consumer spending is slowing. It's one of the worst performances of the recession, since the recession. And we saw people actually drop the amount of big ticket items they bought, like cars and appliances. All of this suggests that we're really moving in the wrong direction.
Well, let me ask quickly about Europe. Obviously, focus right now in London on the Olympics. But is there any reason to care about Europe this week beyond the games?
I think there is a lot of reason to care about Europe, because there's everything that's happening in Europe right now seems to be driving the momentum in the global economy and in the stock market. We got a lot of soothing words from European officials, including Mario Draghi, the head of the European Central Bank. But talk is cheap, and Europe talks a lot. And so we really need to see what comes out of it in the coming week.
Heidi, I want to turn to something that we really didn't cover on the show this week, but it did make waves throughout the financial industry. Former Citigroup CEO Sandy Weill saying that he thinks the big banks are too big and that they need to be broken up. I mean, really, this former banker on too big to fail? Why is he coming out with this now, Heidi?
It could be a number of things: fear, ego, greed. But really, primarily, I think he saw the tide turning, right? I mean, one thing that Sandy Weill, the man who built Citigroup, knows is how to watch a trend. And he saw the trend towards big banks, and he helped make it law. I mean, he lobbied for that law. And now he sees them breaking up. And I think he's going with that trend. Not incidentally, these big banks aren't profitable anymore. So if he has any bank stocks, he's probably a little worried about, how he's going to make money on them. Or rather, they're less profitable.
So Sudeep, is this all about legacy?
It is about legacy, and Heidi is right that he doesn't want to be on the wrong side of the debate in the end. Today you have a lot of smart people all across the spectrum making the same argument that the big banks really need to be taken down. But what's somewhat depressing about this is that we've had somebody in about a decade have a total 180, and that really makes you doubt, and should make you doubt what comes out of anyone's mouth when they express certainty about what policy should be, because this is really a perfect lesson of how things can change so much in a decade.
All right, Sudeep Reddy of The Wall Street Journal and our New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore, I am going to bestow a big gold medal on both of you. Happy weekend.
Thanks, Tess.
Thanks, Tess. Proudly received.
All right. And on Wall Street, as we mentioned, the happy music will be playing. We will have details when we do the numbers. They are finally here. The Olympics are officially underway in London. When the UK bid to host the Games, it promised that London would be a clean city. But this is not about sweeping the sidewalk and removing graffiti and garbage. No, in Olympic speak, clean means uncluttered by advertising, at least from companies that aren't sponsoring the Olympics. So within a 1 kilometer radius of the Olympic Park, only official sponsors are allowed, and woe be to any company that tries to muscle in on the Olympic brand. Our Stephen Beard has the story from London.
Helicopter gunships, missile batteries, even a warship in the Thames. The Brits are throwing everything into protecting the Games. And lawyer Paul Jordan says they're also vigorously defending the Olympic brand.
They will have eyes and ears on the ground around the Olympic Park, which will bolster the 300 or so trading standards officers wandering around. So I think there will be quite an army on the lookout.
In the run-up to the Games, officials have come down hard against any non-sponsors daring to associate themselves with the Olympics. A butcher was threatened with a $30,000 fine. His crime? Dangling 5 sausages, like Olympic rings, in his shop window. And florist Lisa Cross was also threatened for her Olympic flower arrangement, complete with cardboard torch.
Everybody said, what a wonderful display. At the end of the day, we're only supporting, you know, Team GB. So what are we doing wrong? You know, I can't see what I've done wrong.
The crackdown has infuriated staff here at the Spectator magazine. They feel the Olympic authorities have been ludicrously heavy-handed.
I think they're absurd. They're ruining their own brand by excessively protecting it.
Assistant editor Freddie Gray says the Olympic officials are even outstripping totalitarian regimes.
Che Guevara's image was never protected by the Cuban authorities in the way that the Olympics protect the Olympic rings, for instance.
Olympic brand infringement is a criminal offence, and non-sponsors are forbidden by law to advertise anywhere near Olympic facilities. You could argue that a non-sponsoring company is partly to blame. At the Atlanta Games in 1996, the US sportswear giant Nike grabbed a golden opportunity and staged the classic marketing ambush. Mark James is a law lecturer at Salford University.
Nike effectively bought up all of the advertising space in and around the centre, so they were able to get massive media coverage, despite not being the official sponsors of that particular Games.
Which might explain the authorities' zeal to prevent big non-sponsors from stealing the Olympic limelight. But Helen Day is wondering why the Olympic authorities have been bothering her. She runs a small entertainment agency with a troupe of acrobats on her books.
It's all right, no, keep going. It's all right.
Here they are, practising on the trapeze under Helen's watchful eye. When she published a photograph of the girls draped inside 5 aerial rings, the Olympic authorities swung into action and banned the picture.
And I think they've created a real sense of negativity amongst small business owners about the Olympics, which is a real shame because it should be something we're celebrating, something we're getting behind. And after all, it is something that our taxes have paid for.
Thwarting the Olympic authorities and their sponsors could even become a national sport. A leading British wine merchant is offering steep discounts to customers who can prove they've bought products from non-sponsors. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
It's a cliché, I know. The clueless man roaming around the grocery store like a visitor from a foreign planet, while the ladies maneuver the aisles like they're in the Indy 500. Well, men, New York feels your pain. This week, the West Side Market opened what it's calling a man aisle, a space carved out just for you dudes. Gimmick? Sure. Higher sales? Well, we sent Sally Hership shopping to find out.
All right, let's lead the way to the man aisle.
There you go. Can you smell the testosterone?
Ian Jaskowitz is COO of Westside Market. The man aisle is stocked with what else? The man essentials.
So we have all kinds of barbecue sauces, hot sauces, protein bars, protein shakes, Doritos, beer.
Which is probably the most popular item on the man aisle. But the logic behind the layout is gender neutral.
And one thing we know for sure, the more time that you spend in a store, the more you're going to buy there.
David Bell teaches marketing at Wharton. He says creating a grocery store man cave could keep men in the store longer. It could also solve another problem.
So most people, when they shop, have some kind of a list either written down or in memory.
Except for men, especially single ones. And Westside Market's Joskowitz says his male customers are notorious for coming in without a list. Are you a single gentleman?
I am a man, that is correct.
And Randall Appel is single.
I think that's an accurate little aisle there. I don't know, barbecue sauce and Milky Way and beer, and I'm good to go.
Any suggestions for something that should be added?
Maybe some gifts for the girls, you know, chocolates. Even some flowers make it easy for us and get some extra points.
That sensitive gentleman is 20-year-old Benjamin Mace. For any ladies who might feel left out, Westside Market's Ian Jaskowitz says the rest of the store is for you. On New York's Upper West Side, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Coming up, urban revitalization, L.A. style.
And then the new kind of spectacular thing is this interactive fountain, and it's really a big splash pool. So kids and adults, I'm going to, we're running it out.
We can go in there?
Yeah, we're going to.
But first, let's do the numbers. Hello, 13,000. The Dow leapt 187 points today, just shy of 1.5%, close at 13,075. The NASDAQ gained 64 points, 2.25% to finish at 2958. And the S&P 500 rose 25 points, 1.9% to end the day at 1385. For the week, the Dow picked up 2%, the NASDAQ added 1.1%, and the S&P 500 notched 1.7% gain. Confidence that Eurozone leaders would take action to resolve their debt crisis sustained markets for a second day. Financial stocks were big winners. Morgan Stanley jumped 4.1%. Citigroup deposited nearly 3.9%. Among the most active stocks today, Facebook continued its face plant. Shares of the social network dove 11.75% after quarterly results showed growth slowing and costs rising. Shares are now trading nearly $15 below their IPO price. Bond prices fell sharply. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 1.54%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Monday. The Olympics continue with medals awarded in men's diving, men's gymnastics, women's fencing, and swimming. On July 30, 1956, President Dwight D. Eisenhower signed a law establishing the national motto, In God We Trust. Check your wallet. It's printed on your money. And Mr. Universe, the Terminator, and 38th Governor of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger, turned 65. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdal. How much can a company futz with its top moneymaker before it alienates loyal customers? Well, that's the question facing Ford as it scrambles to improve fuel efficiency. The Wall Street Journal reported today that Ford will use mainly aluminum instead of steel on its best-selling F-150 pickup truck starting in 2014. Marketplace's Mark Garrison reports on whether that might shift the definition of Ford Tough.
Built Ford Tough is the truck's slogan. The logo looks like it's cut from gleaming steel. And just to make sure you get the message, it does this in commercials. The logo slams into a block of stone or something and crushes it. Aluminum is strong enough for fighter jets, but it doesn't sound tough. It reminds you of the Sprite can you can squish under your feet. Kevin Cash of Oregon says he wouldn't trade his current Ford truck for one with an aluminum frame.
I think it'd be more flimsy. It'd take away from what a pickup truck is supposed to be. It's a tool. You know, and you don't want to buy a flimsy tool.
Jay Barron runs the Center for Automotive Research in Ann Arbor, Michigan. He doesn't think aluminum will be a tougher sell.
I don't think there will be any marketing challenge. In fact, I think it'll be an asset to indicate that it's got an aluminum structure. For the most part, you can't tell steel versus aluminum unless you put a magnet to it.
David Champion evaluates trucks for Consumer Reports and spoke to me from their testing center in Connecticut. He says there's already lots of aluminum in cars and more on the way because car makers are under pressure to meet tighter fuel economy standards.
I see, you know, many more cars going to a greater use of aluminum in their body frames, etc., just to try and reduce the mass to improve fuel economy.
Ford won't confirm how much aluminum will go into the upcoming truck, but if it's a lot, it'll be a test for the whole industry as to just how tough aluminum can be. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
If you have trouble keeping your lawn green in the summertime, here's an incentive, a $200 ticket. That's what some homeowners in one Denver development are facing for brown patches in their yards. And yes, this is in the same state that just experienced a rash of massive wildfires. Colorado Public Radio's Megan Verley has our story.
There's not a lot of green in Colorado this summer. The corn is withering, the pine trees are parched, and in Lori Werthman's yard, whole patches of grass are just refusing to grow.
I've put plenty of money into it. Now we're throwing water at it. And so when they said, yeah, you still have to pay $200, your lawn doesn't look good, I just thought, you've got to be kidding me.
She's not the only one. Around 500 homeowners in her subdivision got a lawn ticket from the Green Valley Ranch Homeowners Association this summer. But if you think the head of the HOA has no sympathy, you're wrong. Jack Tanner knows it's hard.
Under these economic times, it's rough because lawns are not necessarily the cheapest thing in the world to take care of.
But lawn tickets aren't cheap either. Werthman has until next spring to get her grass to grow, but she's got one heavy-hitting ally. The Denver Water Utility heard about her ticket and sent out a specialist to help with the problem. In Denver, I'm Megan Verlee for Marketplace.
You had to wonder about Hollywood's business model a while back. A few of the major studios started auctioning off some of their most famous props and costumes on eBay. Well, they've since pulled back from that idea, and with good reason, it seems. There is a fortune to be made these days selling movie memorabilia through specialty auction houses. This weekend, there's a, shall we say, dramatic case in point. One of the biggest private troves of Tinseltown treasures is up for auction. Here's our senior business correspondent, Bob Moon.
What would Willy Wonka think? The starting bid for his purple jacket costume will be $60,000 to $80,000, and the famous top hat worn by Gene Wilder starts at $20,000 to $30,000. The whole costume could sell for as much as Wilder got paid to make the movie.
I hope you enjoy it. I think you will. And now, would you please show me your golden tickets?
You can buy those, too, and some other mouth-watering props from the original movie. Joe Maddalena runs the Southern California auction firm Profiles in History. He says some of these keepsakes were given to the actress who played the movie's greedy character Veruca Salt when she celebrated her birthday on the set.
They gave her her gobstopper, and they gave her her golden ticket. You own Veruca's golden ticket. What's that worth?
Bidding starts at?
$20,000 to $30,000, and I wouldn't be surprised if that sold for $50,000.
Now, it's not Veruca's anymore. It belongs to the construction and real estate mogul behind Ryland Homes. Chad Dreyer's family has amassed a wide-ranging collection, everything from Austin Powers to the X-Men.
They bought the most iconic, recognizable costumes they could. Over 10 years of really aggressive collecting.
Maddalena says the Dreyers set out collecting sports memorabilia, but soon learned movie stuff had a much wider appeal.
Take a baseball player like Mickey Mantle. You go outside of the country, they may or may not have ever heard of him. You can go anywhere in the world and they know who Harry Potter is.
Actually, there are no Potter prizes on the block, but Maddalena took me out to the showroom floor for a look at what is up for grabs this weekend. The items include treasures from the first Christopher Reeve Superman movie.
Okay, so this is Marlon Brando's costume. He was Superman's father. This is a reflective duct tape. It has ground-up glass in it. In the movie, Marlon Brando is white. He looks like a god. He kind of glows. This is $60,000 to $80,000.
Across the room, Chewbacca's well-groomed head is on display, also starting at $60,000 to $80,000, so I figured I'd have to settle for something smaller from Star Wars.
What's a lightsaber going to cost me?
I think they're $15,000 to $20,000.
They are, and, you know, they don't even really make that sound. Maddalena says bids come in by mail, phone, and internet from as far away as China and the Middle East. He thinks of it as a new form of art collecting, but he cautions against seeing it as an investment. Your treasure could become the next generation's trash. He says the safest bets come from the classics, like maybe this jacket with a tear in the back.
Ferris Bueller is iconic. That jacket is so recognizable. It's a beloved film.
They think he's a righteous dude.
As Ferris might say, life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around this weekend, you could miss the chance. In Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Cities are the place to live these days. For the first time in a long time, they are growing faster than the suburbs. Here in downtown Los Angeles, including Marketplace World Headquarters, it's no different. For the last 10 years or so, DTLA, as we call it, has become a huge draw with bars and restaurants, theaters, sports venues and lofts. And now, a new addition to the cityscape, Grand Park. 12 acres of open space smack in the middle of a bunch of government buildings and less than a block from Walt Disney Concert Hall. There's grass, flowers, a huge fountain, and a bunch of bright pink movable benches and chairs. It opened this week, so earlier today, we went for a walk in the park. Well, I'm here in downtown Los Angeles, and I'm joined by Dawn McDivitt, who is the project manager for Los Angeles County. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
And Mark Rios, one of the park's designers. Hi there.
It's great to be here.
When we talk about the revitalization of downtowns, you know, it's happening all over the country, and a lot of people are moving back into the city. Why do you think that is at this point in our history?
You know, I think that there is a real desire to have interaction and not be isolated. And so I think that the social community that a downtown area provides is really an incredible experience. There's more theater, there's sports, there's restaurants, there's more of a life. I think the environmental movement contributes to it. Nobody wants to stay in their car and commute and pollute anymore. And so it's better to live closer to where you work. We have a metro station in the middle of our park. It's fantastic.
And yes, for those of you in the rest of the country, we do have public transportation here in Los Angeles.
We are happy to say that.
I mean, I think having residences moving downtown and residential lofts that are now rejuvenated downtown Los Angeles, I think having this park here will be a draw for them. I was here last night at 10, and people were walking their dogs through the park, and they were sitting down watching the fountain.
This is a place like we see in other great cities, whether it's in New York or in Europe. It really gives us a chance to learn about all of us in this great sort of city and just have a place to go to that doesn't cost money.
All right, now we're walking toward what is really an extraordinary and giant fountain that I understand has been here for many, many years, and yet I feel like a terrible citizen of Los Angeles. I had no idea this was here.
So this is the Arthur Wills Fountain, and it was built about 50 years ago, and it was a really great example of a modernism, sort of the optimism of the 50s and 60s. It's a great sculptural form. Looks like something from George Jetson.
Yeah, it does
it's
a little
really,
bit.
It's really, you know, iconic. And then the new kind of spectacular thing, it's this interactive fountain that's at the base of it. And it's really a big splash pool. And so
kids and adults, I'm going to. We're running in out
we
of these
go
kind
in there?
Of, yeah, we're going to.
We have to go
Let's
down there
go
right
do it.
Now.
Let's go do it.
Oh, I cannot tell you the last time I played in a fountain.
How does it feel?
It feels amazing.
Especially is it cold?
It's a warm day. It's cold.
It's interesting. The pavement is dark here, the stone that it's on. And so it holds in heat and basically kind of warms the water up a little bit. So it feels terrific.
It's absolutely beautiful. And what a fun, fun way, not just for kids, but for adults to maybe spend a little time in the water.
Absolutely.
Well, of course, this was hardly free, $56 million, 10 years in the making. As we get splashed by water from the fountain, how will you know that it's paid off?
I think just watching the interaction from the public, from the county's point of view and government's point of view, is the interaction where our patrons can enjoy it. And just watching them enjoy it, we know it's already paid off.
I guess in closing, Mark, let me ask you, what is your grandest vision for Grand Park?
I just want it to be packed with people all the time. Great urban parks take a long time to happen. You know, if you look at Central Park, it took a long time, you know? This is a 50-year goal here.
Well, Don McDivitt and Mark Rios, this has been awfully fun, but I really want to go now because I just want to stand here and play, okay?
Great.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very, very much.
And you can check out photos of the park at marketplace.org.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
And this final note, Frederick Law Olmsted, designer of New York's Central Park and Boston's Emerald Necklace, among others, said that the enjoyment of scenery employs the mind without fatigue and yet exercises it, tranquilizes it, and yet enlivens it. Well, I went for a walk in the park today, this grand park we now have in downtown Los Angeles, and that's exactly what happened. You won't be able to keep me away from it now. The city made an investment in the enjoyment of scenery, and for all of our questions about money and the return on it, well, having a place to dip your toes in a little water, gaze for a moment at green space and iconic architecture, that's the return that matters, as most other world-class cities already know. And that is Marketplace from APM. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Sitara Nieves. The executive producer is Deborah Clark. J.J. Yore is the vice president and general manager. Coming up this weekend on our personal finance show, Marketplace Money, do you work for a paycheck or pride?
You know, you can buy happiness. You find $100, you're happy. The question is, if you find $100, are you proud? I mean, in that moment. And the answer is no. Why? Because you didn't do anything.
Exploring what motivates us to work hard. Spoiler alert, it ain't cash. I'm Tess Vigeland. Have a great weekend. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.